This is the Florida Spectacular Podcast with your hosts, Kathy Silustri and Rick Kilby. Keep up with Kathy at greatfloridaroadtrip.com and on Twitter and Instagram at Kathy Silustri. Find Rick at rickkilby.com. Now, discover a Florida you never knew existed.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to this week's episode of Florida Spectacular. How are you, Rick?
I had an event last night, and I don't know about you. I'm an introvert, and after I do a speaking gig, the next morning, I just got to recharge my batteries. It takes so much out, and I need quiet.
Whenever I have a speaking gig, I don't want to talk for about 2 hours after, and people think, because I am also an introvert, and people go, "Well, you're so outgoing." Well, it's my job. An introvert is just somebody who recharges by being alone instead of being around people. I don't know how people get energized by talking to people. I mean, hell, we do the podcast and I'm like, okay, I need not to talk for 30 minutes.
Well, the best thing is, you know, I do have really wonderful conversations. When people approach you when you're selling books at the end, I usually connect with those people. And I enjoy that tremendously. It's, you know, one of the benefits of doing this, but it just takes a lot out of your introvert batteries.
It's, yeah. I like driving out to my talks that I give at the Villages and the talks that I give at Master of the Possibilities in Ocala, because I have roughly a 2-2.5 hour drive home and I can just sit in silence. And it's, you know, 'cause those are big crowds and they, you know, they're all effusive, wonderful people, but it takes a lot. So, speaking of, before we get to our guest, did I talk to you about Amrit Palace last week?
You did. You're like, they should be our new sponsor, as much publicity as you're giving them.
I it's so bad. I now want Indian food tonight and I have to go out to Master the Possibilities for an open house this afternoon. I'm like, do I have time to take a detour and get it? I have a problem with these foodstuffs. Let's talk about our guest who you have ferreted out, not to imply that you're a ferret, Karen Chadwick. And I have a big, long bio about Karen, but you know her. So why don't you kick it off and tell us about Karen before we let her start speaking? I mean, let her.
I will say, I mean, I think the best thing I can say about Karen is she is one of my heroes in the environmental movement in Florida, because she's fearless and she's relentless and she's always on it. I think I met her. There was an event right by Rodman Dam on the other side of the Ocklawaha. And I went, and that's where I think I learned from her about this project they were doing called Adena Springs Ranch, where they wanted to have this big permit to withdraw all this water for this stupid beef ranch. And that's kind of where I started to get involved with the environment as an advocate for our springs. But the other aspect of Karen is that she's a wonderful artist. She has her BFA in sculpture and painting from Ringling. And she just had an event Friday. Karen, didn't you have an event Friday in High Springs?
Yeah, at the Florida Springs Institute.
The work looked great. Did you create stuff specifically for that show?
No, specifically to a subject, but not specifically for that show. It's what it's about. It's paintings and drawings of birds, mostly birds paintings, based on photographs that I've taken during the Rodman drawdowns. So they're different sizes. They're all oil. And when the water's down, a lot of birds go out there and feed, thousands of them. It's amazing to see. And the eagles will perch on the stumps or sit on the berm and eat fish. I see a lot of glossy ibis then. I saw some yesterday flying up. And it's just, there's so many birds, so much, you know, you're getting back about 10,000 acres of wildlife habitat. And there's bear tracks everywhere. We see Osceola turkeys. One of the paintings is from a photograph I took of Osceola turkeys feeding on the areas that are exposed during the drawdown. And then some of the paintings are of fish that are blocked by the dam, like the striped bass. Used to be a really good bass fishery close to where Silver River dumps into the Ocklawaha. There was a fish camp there, and people would come and fish for striped bass there during that season, the spring season. So it's fish and birds mostly.
I remember hearing about the stripers going up to the Silver Springs to spawn. And I remember as a kid asking my dad, and it's like, so what do you think the stripes do now? And my dad says, I guess they just go up to the dam and bang their head against it.
Aww.
That's a typical answer from my dad. I still remember it to this day because I have this vision of these poor stripers just wanting to do what's in their, you know, in their genes and just banging their head against the stupid dam.
Yeah, well, there's still a big fishery there in the spring. They use the white rubber jig, like a little shad jig, and they toss right into the spillway, and the fish are piled up in there, trying to keep going up the Ocklawaha.
So even generations later, it's still in their DNA to try and go there.
Well, most of them are the sunshine bass, the ones I've seen. But I know they're released in the rivers and they come up there. They come up into Silver Glen quite a bit too in the summer. But I know that the FWC folks that go out and do the fish counts with the shock boats, they have documented Atlantic striped bass downstream of the dam in the Ocklawaha.
Interesting. So, wow. So downstream is you know, the side between Wallaca and the dam. Is that downstream?
Yes.
Okay.
And there's a Facebook page where it's Robin Dam Fishing. And there's a guy that puts a GoPro down at the spillway, and the fish are stacked up in there. You can see hundreds of them, all kinds of fish, just stacked up in there trying to migrate through. But that's why fishing is good there, usually because the fish are trying to migrate, so they get stopped at the dam.
Interesting. Well, so you've already been out on since the drawdown occurred?
Yes.
So tell us what it's like.
Yeah.
Well, the Kenwood ramp is open, and I went out Sunday at 1 o'clock and I had to wait half an hour in line to be able to launch. It's just packed. And then Monday I went to look and see if it was equally as packed, and there were even more trucks there with boat trailers, boats out. People go out really early at sunrise. It's very popular during the drawdowns.
I think we need to probably take a step back. And for listeners who have not been with us for very long, Rick, we're getting some new listeners. I think we need to give a real encapsulated, this is what we're talking about.
Good idea.
So I'll start and you can jump in. I'm going to try and make it quick. Years ago, there was this half-assed, stupid-assed idea to cut a canal from Crystal River to Jacksonville so ships could cut across Florida faster. And it was called the Cross Florida Barge Canal. And long story short, a wonderful woman, Marjorie Harris Carr, and one of her grassroots groups, they were able to really stop it. But one of the things that remains from this is the Rodman Dam. And Rick, do you want to talk about what the Rodman Dam does?
It stops the flow of the Ocklawaha River. You know, the Ocklawaha River, I think, originates at Lake Griffin in the Harris Chain of Lakes and goes up. And then the water, all the water that comes out of Silver Springs, adds to the flow of the Ocklawaha plus 20 other springs. And, you know, it basically chokes off that river. There's a canal that with a lock that you know, will reach the St. Johns. But the Ocklawaha River is one of those rare rivers that flows north and, you know, is a big tributary of the St. Johns. And it's just choked. And so this stupid reservoir is just a environmental nightmare. Karen, you want to add to that?
Oh, sure. I wanted to say, too, I remember meeting you. That was a rally for the rivers at the dam.
That's what it was.
A couple of organizations working on that. Putnam County Environmental Council with Karen Allers organized that. And I remember taking you out on the boat and we were going down to do the loop where you go around it's the natural part of the Ocklawaha, mm-hmm. or you can go down the spillway. We went down the natural part. And I was familiar with your book, and you were standing there next to me, and we were going along for a while. Most of the people on my boat are strangers. I've never met them before. And I remember I said, "So what's your name?" And you said your name, and I was already familiar with your book. And I was like, "Oh, you wrote that book." You never know who you're going to be standing next to. So, that was a neat moment. So I do meet some interesting people on the boat.
Honestly, it changed my life, you know, because for one, you know, it was learning about that project. But the other thing was, it was my first time back on the river since I was a kid. And it just it used to be when you got that close to the dam, the water was, you know, super clear. It was, you know, it wasn't like being at a spring, but you could see the bottom.
Yeah, it's pretty rare now. So the dam backs up the water and floods close to around 10,000 acres. And it's still killing the old cypress trees. Trees are still falling in. And so they do let the water out at the dam. The dam is past its life expectancy. It's got holes in it. It's got serious undermining. They have to spend a couple $100,000 every so many years to take the logs out that are jammed up against the manatee grates. There's the dam gate where the water goes through, and then there's a grate system, like a gate that stops. It's supposed to keep manatees from getting jammed up against the gate and drowning, and it's supposed to keep the logs away from the gate or the grate. The gate, I'm sorry, the gate that goes up and down that lets the water through.
Oh.
And so it's a constant maintenance issue. They're supposed to be doing an inspection now. It's deemed a high hazard structure because, well, when we got the last reports, a lot of it was redacted, so you really can't tell what's going on. But from the report before that, I saw photographs where there's holes, there's bolts missing, there's a lot of undermining. And if it does fail, which it could fail, there's a map that shows which parts of Wilaka would be impacted. So all that water would just go rushing out, knocking down trees and pushing mud and, making a big dangerous mess downstream from the dam. So, and I just wanted to mention too, for decades, the Florida State plan, the FDEP plan, is to restore the hydrology of the Ocklawaha River by removing parts of the earthen dam and reconnecting the river. The riverbed's still there. And it's a three-year plan, a staged, slow drawdown. They'd bring barges over there and pump out the muck and send it over to the sand pit where the sand came from that blocked the river in 1968. And so it's a shovel ready plan basically, but they still keep throwing, I don't even really know how much money into repairing the dam. The lock's been closed, Buckman Lock that goes from the St. John's River over to the east end of the impoundment, Rodman Impoundment. They've been closed all year. And I understand they're repairing the manatee safety equipment. It's supposed to be sort of like an elevator. When you stick the elevator doors are closing and you stick your arm in there and the elevator, you're pretty confident, you know, the doors are going to open again.
Yeah.
Well, the manatees were getting crushed in there. So they've been working on replacing the manatee safety structures. So why don't they just restore the river, follow the FDEP plan, instead of throwing money at these expensive repairs over and over and over, prop up this failing system that's blocking manatee migration, fish migration. The old historic route from the steamboats, that was very popular, and people used that right up until the late 60s, you know, when the river was blocked. It would bring back tourism, fish, manatees, you know.
So I have a question about what you said earlier about the amount of people using the river right now, you know, at the boat ramps. Is that more than would be there? I mean, are those ramps accessible when there's not a drawdown? And two, is this an increase in people, and are they just going to fish and the fishing's better now?
There were ramps built at Kenwood, Orange Springs, and Eureka and Payne's Landing, that they were built to the high water, the flood water stage. So when they do a drawdown, the river goes back into its channel, particularly at Orange Springs. Wilaka, the water gets, the ramp is usable there at Eureka, but it's sketchy, it's tricky. You got to be careful. I can't get my pontoon boat in there right now, just my center console. So the ramps people usually use throughout the years, unless they're doing a drawdown, they're built to the high water level. Then when they do the drawdown, they open up the road that goes out to where the ferry landings were. Like if you go out to the Kenwood ramp now, it's just a rocky, muddy ramp. There's no concrete. That was the road that went over to the ferry landing that ferry went over to Cedar Landing. There's some old Florida memory pictures of that. And I met a guy last week that you were talking about speaking engagements. I always meet people that, they want to tell you their history of the area. There's still a lot of historical knowledge of people that knew the river well and loved it before the dam. Anyway, so at Kenwood, you drive out it's the old road from the 1800s that went down to the Cedar Landing Ferry. And during the low water times, drawdown times, you can still see parts of that ferry. There's like some timbers there, and I couldn't see it this time, but there's some old metal cables and some big metal bolts sticking out of the timbers. That's still there under the water. I could see it last week. So that, I don't know. There's so much history out there. Then same thing with Orange Springs. When the water's down, you follow the old road out. They bring in a bulldozer and they bulldoze the muck that builds up over the years. It's been 6 years since the last drawdown. So 6 years of muck, they bulldoze off the old road. And that goes out to where that ferry landing was. And they still call it, some of the locals still call it the ferry landing ramp on the Hog Valley side. And there's that, I can't use that ramp. That's rocky and muddy, and I don't have four-wheel drive, so I can't use that one. But it's interesting, there's people fishing all along, right at the river, during the drawdowns. That's the only time they can fish there. There'll be a lot of people fishing there. People fish along the shoreline at the Kenwood ramp. And so you can get down to those old historic areas. And then when the water comes up, that's all gone. You have to use the high water ramp.
I remember one time when I went out with you for one of the drawdowns, and it was super windy, and there was an old guy fishing, and I'm like, "How you think you're going to catch fish when it's this windy?" And it's like, "It ain't windy underwater."
Yeah, that's right. And you know, there's a lot of confusion, and there's a lot of misinformation out there. When the last drawdown was ending, I went out to Orange Springs. And talk to, like, there's families that set up out there. They have a little campfire, maybe. When it's sunny, they put up an umbrella. They have a great time. The kids are running around. And I asked one of the guys fishing, I said, "They're going to close this gate tomorrow. This would be the last day because the water's coming up." He said, "Yep, that's the end of it." And I said, "Well, what do you think about if they restored the river? You could fish out here every day from now on." And he said, "Well, I think that would cause a lot of flooding if they restored the river. I don't think that would be good." And I said, "No, if they restored the river, it would stay like this." And he didn't seem to understand. He thought the dam was flood protection. The dam is causing flooding. There's a lot of misinformation that gets put out about it. And so some people are, even though they love the drawdown, they're confused. They think we shouldn't restore the river because that will cause flooding. But the opposite is true. The dam is causing flooding.
Don't they usually?
Yeah.
Especially when they break.
There's a commercial on television now, or at least on, I think, Hulu. Because I'll be damned if I'm going to pay to avoid commercials. But there's a commercial that talks about a new truck that's out. I think it's Ford, and it cites a dam as this was built with American ingenuity. And it's like this very rah-rah jingoist commercial about how
America is great because they built this dam, and you can be great too if you have this truck. And I want to throw my shoe at it. Because I'm like, dams are never good. Like, I understand why we did them, but it just, it's a disruption to the natural system. And I don't think we should be celebrating things like that right now.
And, you know, it's so wonderful to see it when it's, you know, during the drawdown, when it, we don't see the impacts of it, you know. Or, I mean, you always see the impacts of it. But like, you know, one of the things that Karen documents is the little bitty baby cypress trees starting to grow again all along the banks. And you can see them, you know, life is trying, you know, it's like Jurassic Park. Life finds a way and it's trying to come back and restore itself. But, you know, the water goes back up and they drown.
It does start to come back. Within that 4 months, there are cypress seedlings, maple, swamp tupelo, all kinds of little trees start coming up. Just in, they get maybe maximum foot tall, I've seen. And they're just everywhere. We've got tons of pictures and videos of them, like shivering in the wind, the little breeze. And they're growing, they're doing it. But then they bring the water up and they all drown again. So it's like they re-kill it every time they do a drawdown. The forest would grow right back. If you go around and look at the edges of the high water, you see all those cypress trees growing everywhere all around the perimeter. Those have all grown up just on their own. There's seeds in that mud. It's like a giant seed bank. And if they have to be exposed to air, they can't sprout underwater, of course. So if you want to say, well, in 50 years, what are these trees going to be like? Look around the edges. The trees are huge. I've been watching it for 30 years, and they were pretty big then. So over the last 30 years, they're like down at Eureka, where the lock and dam systems were put in. That was all bulldozed down to sand. And the previous Greenway manager confirmed that all those trees have grown up. It's a beautiful wetland forest at the high water level. All those trees have grown up on their own since the Eureka lock and dam system were put in. Unfortunately, they didn't block the river there in the Eureka area, because that would have created another impoundment, like Rodman would have killed who knows how many millions of trees. And they were going to put a lock and dam system close to Silver River and block the river there. That would have ruined Silver River. It was getting to be a terrible disaster in the making. And the dam has not served the purpose it was intended for ever. It never needed to be. They should have just opened it right up when Nixon said, okay, stop this project. They should have reconnected the river and just let it flow like it used to. But that didn't happen. In 1995, Ed Taylor, a Putnam County commissioner, started the Save Rodman Group because they wanted to keep it as a fishing hole. And there's been the head of the Save Rodman Group since then has always been a Putnam County commissioner and still is. And it's not any particular party. It's been both parties and political parties. So it's not about, well, it's kind of is a division now, but when you have a county commissioner, you know, pushing keeping this in place, it's a steep hill to climb to get around that. There's been surveys, public surveys that show the vast majority of people want the river to be restored, even in Putnam County. And it's just right now, it's just it's a political. Well, what they get votes, the Putnam County commissioners get votes when they say, Save Rodman, this is ours. Marion County actually has the majority jurisdiction around the impoundment from Orange Creek South. That's all on the west side. That's all Marion County. And Putnam County is basically holding Marion County's fish hostage at the dam. Putnam County is not allowing Marion County's fish to get into the Ocklawa and down to Silver River. I've been going to Silver River since Silver Spring since I was like 4 years old. I was born in 59. And every time I go there, there's less fish in Silver Springs. It's just practically barren.
And they're all invasive. So, you know, what I remember last time I was there was tilapia and the armored catfish, the pleco. And that's about it. I didn't see really any native species hardly at all. Every once in a while you'll see a bass, but not many.
No, I haven't seen a catfish there in years.
Not a channel cat. Yeah, it's channel. They used to have this thing called catfish football, where they must have threw down some kind of bait or something, and the catfish would just swarm around it. And you know, I think I may have seen one or two channel, but it's all the non-native invasive dinosaur looking ones that belong in Brazil.
Yeah, there's some projects to get rid of the invasives, and there's not too many plecos in there now.
Oh, good.
But the problem with those, and you can see it during the drawdown when you go north, it's between south of Orange Springs. There's a place called Indian Bluff, and when the water's down, you can see the tunnels. The plecos make sort of a triangular cave. They burrow into the bank, and there's clay right there, so it's kind of stable. But, you know, they undermine the banks. That the plecos are really bad for that. They dig out these tunnels, and then they lay their eggs back in the tunnels. So they destabilize shoreline.
So, Karen, Rick called you a hero. And then in looking for some links to put up in the show notes so our listeners can always, we always like to give them something where they can learn more.
Mm-hmm.
I see that you have actually been designated a conservation hero by, Florida Wildlife Federation, I believe. And now I have to check. I'm sorry.
I don't know about all that.
Well, yeah, the Florida Wildlife Federation calls you a conservation champion, and it's a fairly recent designation. They gave it to you in April or August 2025. And I just want to read a little bit that they wrote about you. And it says, you have a gift for connecting people to place, revealing not just the wildlife in view, but also the forces of time, geology, and human history that have shaped each waterway. So this sounds like you take a boat trip with you. It's a little bit different than all the old yarns some of the boat captains like to spin. Tell us a little bit about what you do on your boat when you take people out and where you take them out, if you don't mind.
Well, like I said, I was born in 59 in Sarasota. I'm a Florida native. And I remember in school, the teachers were talking about, well, we had two things of main concern. We had the practice where you get under your desk in case the Russians nuked the
right,
US.
Right, because putting
duck
your hand...
Cover.
Yeah, duck and
yeah.
cover. Put your
duck
hands
cover,
over the back of your neck and you'll be safe.
Right, we had those drills. It's, I guess we're still back there now, so with that. But the other concern was the Cross Florida Barge Canal. I remember on TV, the black and white reports about it, they were cutting Florida in half. And I grew up going to the beach all the time, and in the Myakka with the creeks and everything, and mucking around in the mud and all that, mud flats. And even as a little kid, I was like, whoa, this is terrible. There was a big fight to stop, and we were aware of it all the way down in Sarasota as children in school. And so that always stuck with me. And so I ended up going to Ringling. When I was a little kid, my aunt was, I think I sent this to you in the bio, she was a military teacher in Germany and Italy. She would send books about the things in museums, paintings, sculptures, the paleontology museums, archaeology, all that. And I would, just go over that. And I remember at 7 years old, I thought, what do I want to be, an archaeologist, or do I want to be an artist? Do I want to make the stuff people will find in 1,000 years or whatever, or do I want to find it? And I thought, well, anybody can find it. I want to make stuff that people will find in the future, stone carvings. That's where I got my degree in stone carving and painting. And so I was like 7 years old when I decided that. And then I have a picture that Bruce Moser took with his studio at Silver Springs when I was on a glass bottom boat with my mom and my aunt, my sister and my grandma. And it's black and white, of course. And we're sitting in the glass bottom boat. I remember I wanted to drive that boat so badly. I was like, my hands were all over the motor. I ran down to the motor to touch it. And my mom's sitting there in the picture. You can see she's holding my hands down. I'm on her lap. She's imprisoning me with her with her embrace. And I remember thinking, you know, as a little kid, I'm going to get a boat and I'm going to come here and I'm going to take people out myself, you know. And I did end up doing that. And so I moved up here in 90 to the Orange Springs area, Interlock. I live in Interlochen now. And I moved up here to work on the exhibits for the Silver River Museum. So we worked with the historians and the archaeologists, paleontologists, the state geologists to try to get the exhibits as accurate as possible. And then, you know, I still love going out and mucking around and learning new things. And, you know, it's thrilling to see an eagle fly over. It's amazing. You know, I never lose that thrill. So I just want to, it's like puzzle pieces, you know, just to put it all together. I'm always meeting people that I learn new things from. I've got a YouTube channel. I think there's about 14 interviews with people that knew the river before the dam. And I've got a new list of people that I want to take out and do just short interviews with and put on that. So you can look at that YouTube channel. It's just Karen Chadwick. If you type Karen Chadwick Ocklawaha, it should come up. And you can see the videos from all the people. But I learned from them. I feel like I learn more from people than I don't want to use the word teach, but share with people. I learn more all the time.
I want to just give her a plug, though. Like, she brings a bag full of goodies and pulls out, like, oh, this is a mastodon tooth that was found at the bottom of the river, you know, and pulls out these artifacts. So I think that's the point you were getting at, Kathy, is it isn't. It's, you know, most boat tours don't do that.
Yes, no, they do not. I you know, the bane of my existence, because, you know, my husband and I met when he was boat captain and I was crew. And we've worked together on several boats, and we go on a lot of boat tours when we travel. And in Florida, you know, I probably should not, because I get so apoplectic when I hear things that are incorrect or see things. Like the one I went on last year where the boat captain pulled over to feed the owls. And I mean, it was this incredible thing, but I'm like, I can't promote this boat tour because this is a really horrible behavior. Even though he said it wasn't. You know,
I got to know, what did he feed him? Did he have like mice or something?
I don't remember. I think it might have been chicken.
Oh, God.
And he was talking about how they don't depend on him and they forage for themselves. And it's just these two owls, except for it was fledged at that point. They're young, who was now learning to come over to the boat. And he was having these beautiful predators fly onto the boat to get the stuff so we could all get good pictures. And I was like, one part of me was like, I am never going to see an owl up close like this again. That's super cool. And the rest of me is like, what the shit are you doing?
Yeah. Like,
so
we won't be doing that on Captain Karen's boat.
No,
we don't do that.
It's as much as we would all love to see an owl up close or a gator up close or any of these animals up close, it's almost always bad when humans can interact with wildlife. It
puts them in danger.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if you think owls are just the cute little thing, I will remind you that they are all leg and talon. if you've ever seen a picture of a wet owl, they're all leg muscle. I don't want him to think I'm holding chicken. I digress. My point is, it sounds like, and we're going to put a link in the show notes to North Star Charters, which is your company. And it's just northstarcharters.net. So people, when they're in the area, can go boating with a responsible boat captain who's going to actually teach them about different ecosystems and threats to the environment and all those sorts of things.
In archaeology and paleontology and history. So, Karen, do you want to give a shout out to Captain Erica too?
She really can't say no after you position
well,
it
she
that
lives
way.
From, so Karen only leaves from certain places. You know, she mentioned a bunch of these places. So there's different things to see during the drawdown. You know, there's the historic channel where, you know, all these cypress stumps that are textured come back out of the water, and it's kind of like going through a graveyard of what used to be. But there's right. also the springs. And so to get the full experience, you know, you might need to leave from different places.
Right. And The water is super low right now in all the lakes. I've been documenting my lake all summer. It's just been going down, down, down. Everything is really low, including the Ocklawaha, towards the south, like the Silver River area and north. It's really low at Eureka. So Erica is keeping her boat in the water there at Eureka, and she's doing tours of that area. It's just too low to get the pontoon boats in and out there now. So I'm only going out at Kenwood. And if you go out at Kenwood, you can go over to Blue Springs and Catfish Springs. You go through the stump field and you can see the boil, but those springs never turn blue. They keep the water artificially a little bit high to keep the locks operating when they're working. And so there's over the years, like it's been 6 years since the last drawdown, this muck, plant muck stuff builds up. And so that muck is just kind of roiling. The spring flow increases and it's trying during the drawdown and it's trying to blow that muck out. So you can see that there's a spring there, but it's not like, oh, that's a beautiful blue spring. So I'm going in that area. It's fascinating to see. It really is. You really don't get the whole picture unless you go out at Kenwood and see what happened to the forest there. We call it the drowned forest. So the springs that turn blue, Cannon is the most famous one. That's down towards Eureka. Right now, well, there's been a tree blocking the river. I think they just cut it out, but that's been blocking the river between Eureka and Cannon to motorboat traffic. But the run is so shallow right now. You can get kayakers can get in there, paddlecraft, canoeists. You can launch at Eureka and paddle down to the Cannon Springs run and go up in there. If it gets much lower, you probably won't be able to get in there, even with that. But if we get a little bump of rain, that might bring it up some. So motorboats, as far as I know, are not going in there. Airboats could. Anyway, that's another thing. Then north of that is Tobacco Patch. And you can't paddle back in there either. There's too many trees down. Tobacco Patch Spring. You can pull, there's sort of a beach there now. You can pull your kayak up on the sand and walk back to the spring. Walk, just follow the run. It's kind of mucky. You might lose a shoe. But if you do stop there, you want to pull your kayak way up, because if a boat comes flying by, it can create a wake that can wash your kayak out, and then it'll be gone downstream. And then so north of that downstream from Tobacco Patch is Payne's Landing. That's where the Payne's Landing Treaty was signed. And that's a whole nother story.
Is that the one where Osceola supposedly stuck his knife into the treaty?
Supposedly, yes.
Supposedly.
Yeah.
I have to just, so Karen keeps saying mucking around. The first time I went, she had created these, she got these boots and she got badminton rackets and made kind of like snowshoes. Bay out of badminton rackets, so you could, because what happens is these islands kind of reemerge in the middle, and you want to go out on them. There's something about it. They just call to you because they're you know, it's like this thing that's not normally on land, and you want to go see it and explore, but it's all mucky, and if you just go with regular shoes, it's going to pull them off your very first step. So she created these little homemade snowshoe things for the mud. Do you still have those?
Well, actually that I have to put them back together. It's regular rubber boots, the tall boots. And then I took a piece of shelving, you know, the rubberized shelving for your closet.
Uh-huh.
And I cut, cause it needed to be real sturdy. I cut it into lengths with, to fit my shoes, and it'll be on with the bolt cutters. And then I duct tape the shelving to my boots and so I wouldn't sink in the muck. And they did come in pretty handy.
Yeah. Cause you want to, I remember I was dying to get out there and see it, you know, it's, and oh, so the other thing I remember so distinctly was the size of the alligators. They're just mm-hmm. enormous and,
healthy is the word you're looking for.
Well, some of them weren't. I remember seeing one with a broken jaw.
Yeah. Aww.
Yeah,
that was
no,
a bad
I'm sad. No, we got to end on a better note than that, Rick. And we're almost out of time. So
honestly,
happy, please.
I think it's, you know, old Florida is disappearing so fast. This is a glimpse of old Florida and what could be its future. And I urge all our listeners to get out there and take advantage of it, because they right now, as long as that stupid dam is up, they only do it every like 4 to 6 years. And it's a glimpse into, you know, a world of the past and a world of what could be. That's my spiel.
And should be, according to the FDEP plan.
Yeah, we had high hopes, but the current governor squashed those hopes.
Yeah, the bill was vetoed the last 2 years to start the restoration process. But, you know,
historically, at some point, the river will find its way back.
It will. But
I mean, I'd like to see it in my lifetime.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So we're going to put all sorts of links in there so you can book a trip with Captain Karen or Captain Erica. It's well worth your while, and it's a beautiful time of year, and you'll see tons of wildlife. I remember one time we went, it had been after a big rain, but it still was worth getting out there. And you can swim in Cannon Springs. It's, you know, not a, what is it? Is Cannon Springs third magnitude, maybe?
I think it's third.
Yeah, so it's not a big spring, but it's still, you know, pretty. And, you know, it's surrounded by Ocala National Forest, a lot of it. So, you know, you're not going to see. I just remember the one house we saw was Dr. Strange's house.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's a whole nother story.
So there's a lot of good stories out there. And, oh, mm-hmm. Can you still see the tree that you can get inside, the cypress tree?
It's still there. I went by it before the draw. Well, when the drawdown was just starting, I could get over that tree in the river. I don't go up there unless the water's down, but yeah, it's still there. It's still alive.
Karen actually did a little tea party inside this tree.
Aww. All right. Well, Karen, thank you so much for everything you're doing. And then for coming on the show. We'll let you get out and get back out on the water now, but we'd love to talk to you more in the future.
Okay. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks so much. And everybody else, we want to thank you for listening and caring and all that kind of good stuff. For our paid listeners who support us, we want to give you a special, special thanks out. Thank you. Shout out. We definitely appreciate the listeners who stand by us every week. We have a new listener this week, Kelly Sturdy. We want to thank her. I actually, Kelly, do not know if you are a woman or a man. I'm going to go with woman. If it's wrong, I apologize. Thank you for listening. Then we, of course, have Stephanie Hewley, Brad Sager, Brian Woodall, Bet's Boys Adventure, who Karen also have their own YouTube channel, not on the Ocklawaha, just their travels around the country. Elise Smith, Carol Miller, Davita Breyer, Natalie Zachrick, Angela Connolly, John Bowne, and Ryan Worthington. And in the very near future, Ryan and I are going to be doing a special episode of the podcast talking about some disenfranchised groups in Florida. So please tune in, keep listening, make sure you subscribe to us. And if you feel so moved, go to floridaspectacular.buzzsprout.com and look for our podcast button that says support. You can help us too. Thank you. We'll see you all next time on the Florida Spectacular.
See you on the river.